Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Hi, talking about the continued protests across the country and here in Los Angeles. By the way, the other three police officers involved in the George Floyd killing last week were charged today in Minneapolis. There is a 9 p.m. curfew for Los Angeles and a 10 p.m. curfew for the county of Los Angeles today. And there are protests currently in downtown L.A., West Hollywood, the Mayor's House, and in Newport Beach, along with downtown L.A., which is an enormous, enormous protest.
Aaron Rodgers, who is basically in the same, for lack of a better word, I'll say class as Drew Brees.
Two guys on their,
two guys on their way to the Hall of Fame that are about the same age. Just tweeted out a picture on Instagram where he is locking arms on the sidelines during an anthem, and he says this. A few years ago, we were criticized for locking arms in solidarity before the game. It has never been about an anthem or a flag. Not then, not now. Listen with an open heart, let's educate ourselves, and then turn word and thought into action. That's the pivot that I think Drew Brees didn't realize the rest of the country has made. Drew's hanging on to the discussion from 3 years ago. And you said something interesting. You said, we'll see, like Vic Fangio, I think, was almost forced into apologizing today. We'll see if Brees feels the same way. We'll see if he comes back and tries to walk this back in any way, shape, or form. He hasn't so far.
No, not yet. Not yet. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Johnny from Los Angeles. Johnny, you're on 710 ESPN. Hey.
Hey, how you doing? First off, I just want to say I think Cap was a great player, and he's a great person. But Drew's perspective, it's spot on. Okay, I just think Cap used the NFL time to his advantage, and I just think it was the wrong time to do it. Now, if he kneeled while he was out of work on his own time, that would have been great. But he just kneeled at a time where people weren't understanding what he was doing, and I think he realized doing it at that particular moment was going to get a rise out of the country. Now,
that's the point of protest, is to get a rise out of the country, man.
And I totally get it. I totally get it. But
and look how the world has changed since we sat him down. Look at how the world has changed. We saw a man die last week.
Well, not to differ from the point, but black-on-black crime has been far worse than officer crime against black people. So, I mean, I don't understand that. There should have been protests during those kind of incidences. And the people that filed all those complaints against that officer, I blame them just as much as I blame the officer, because they didn't follow through with their complaints and make sure.
No, there were 16 complaints filed against that officer. His department didn't pursue. In other words, he was found to be he was reprimanded twice, but 14 times he was allowed to go away. And you know that's a function of strong police unions.
By the way, Johnny, I'm curious, Johnny, how old are you?
I'm 43 years old. I'm a Latino. I'm from a Mexican family. I'm not Caucasian. I'm not black. So I'm like in the middle of this conversation. But
sure,
I know
right.
All those facts on the officers. I just thought if somebody did something to my child or a family member, I would follow through to the ends of the earth, social media wise and everything, to make sure something happened to this officer. The 17 complaints that were done, those people made their complaint and walked away.
Johnny, the department
was going to take care of that.
Johnny, they don't have the power to get to remove that officer. The Minneapolis
PD
does.
That's where you're wrong. The power of one person, the voice of one person, just like Kaepernick, is as strong as the voice and power of 1,000 people.
Right, but he was not found guilty of any wrongdoing in those other incidents. It's not a matter of somebody saying, I withdraw my charge. It's a matter of the department saying, we're not going to discipline you.
Well, that's not what I said. I didn't say they withdrew their charge. I said, I think they stopped at the point where they got an answer, or they got what they said was, hey, we're not going to fire this officer, or this is the end of the discussion, and they gave up. Now, like I said, I would have went to the ends of the earth if that had happened from an officer to me or a family member of mine.
Yeah, so Johnny, I think you're naive. I mean, let me put it this way.
Okay.
Do you think any of the parents in Sandy Hook who watched their kids get gunned down have given up because they haven't changed any laws. They're fighting for it every day. They just haven't won yet.
That's a whole different conversation. I don't believe in strengthening the gun laws. I mean, I know you're probably going to say that that's a naive comment, but the guns don't kill people. It's the people that have the guns that kill people.
My point in bringing that up is I didn't want to have a gun control debate. I wanted to say that you say you would go to the ends of the earth. You can still do that. You can go to the ends of the earth if someone in your family, God forbid, gets hurt. But there's only so much you can do.
You're tying people's hands by saying that.
If the police department, you keep going back to these charges, and by the way, we don't know specifically exactly what these were. We know there were 16 complaints. He was disciplined in two of them. You're assuming that somehow somebody withdrew their complaint. That's not the case.
In these cases,
Johnny, the phrase you used was they gave up. How do you know they gave up?
Well, because nobody heard about it after those complaints. I mean, like, for example, this person, Floyd.
Because maybe there wasn't videotape like there was with George Floyd.
That makes a big difference.
There's a paper trail. It's just as effective as a videotape. Now, granted, it's not as visual, but it's just as effective. And I'm not saying the people gave up. I'm just saying that they kind of walked away. Like, they brushed it off like a lot of people do in life. They wash their hands of it when they're tired of fighting. And maybe these particular people that...
Again, you're saying they gave up.
Yeah, I don't think that, Johnny, we appreciate your call. We just disagree with you.
Yeah,
like,
disagree.
Almost every point you made, I disagree with. Let's go to Alfred from West Covina. Alfred, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
How's it going, guys?
Hey,
good,
Alfred.
I'm a veteran, and I was in the Army active duty while Kaepernick was kneeling. And I never once felt disrespected at all. I felt more disrespected when people are trying to uphold his freedom of speaking and protesting. That is more damning than someone kneeling for the flag. That I had so many soldiers in my company that did not once feel disrespected for kneeling on the flag. Not even burning the flag. This is a country built on protest, and we're over here damning someone for protest. That hurts me so much. That I'm a soldier, and it hurt me while I was in the Army. I wanted to kneel, but I couldn't while I was in the Army. And I would tell soldiers, like, man, I wish we could kneel, but, you know, we couldn't at that time. Because every morning we would form up to salute the flag, but I wanted to kneel in solidarity because I grew up in black neighborhoods. I grew up in South Central. I grew up in Hawthorne. I grew up all around Los Angeles in black communities. And I'm a Latino, and I understand that we deal with discrimination, but I understand that they have it worse than I do. I have more of a privilege being a Latino than they do. And I understand that Black Lives Matter is a fight for everyone, not... All lives matter is a counter to Black Lives Matter. It's trying to approve the Black Lives Matter movement.
Alfred, it's getting better. Right. It's getting better. I mean, people, I think if you look at the makeup, the colors of the faces of the people that are protesting, you're going to see that point is being made, the one you just talked about, that it's not just black people that are protesting. It's everybody.
Yeah,
I see that it's getting better. And the last caller, I guess he doesn't understand systemic racism. And he's saying black on black crime is worse. Black on black crime is a result of a systemic racism. It's been to this country since before civil rights. And throughout this whole time that we feel like we should have our freedoms.
All right. Thank you, Alfred, for the point.
Thank you for your service. Yeah, thank you for your service. Absolutely.
Let's get Mark from Santa Clarita in here on line one. Hey, Mark, you're on ESPN LA. Hi.
How you guys doing, Mason, Ireland?
All right,
okay,
Mark, how are you?
How you doing?
Doing well. You know, I've been listening to you guys for damn near 20 years, and I appreciate all your insight. I'm biracial. I'm a police officer here in the city of LA, and being African American, Hispanic, I'll tell you right now, the reason I joined the department is because of the history that LAPD had, and I wanted to make a difference in my community. And it's difficult because I've been a police officer for 13 years, watching the civil unrest occur now that it happened like in 92. But I think the main difference, and you guys have touched on this, is that you have blacks, you have Hispanics, you have Asians, you have people of all different social strata protesting. And I think it's great as long as it's peaceful. And I think that right now we need to facilitate and protect those protesters and make sure that they have a voice. But we also have to make sure that we police our city and keep it safe so that they can protest.
Yeah, you know, Mark, I was going to say one of the things that has been encouraging the last couple of days is that protesters have actually stood up to people who were trying to loot or trying to do destruction. The protesters themselves have sort of self-policed themselves and tried to get those people who would do destruction to stop,
hey, by
which
the way,
I think is really encouraging.
Mark, have you been on duty this week? Have you been working this week?
Yes.
What's it been like? What's it been like for you?
I'll be honest with you, as a police officer, you're just trying to make sure you're staying focused. You know, we've taken rocks and bottles. You're hearing the help calls go out. You know, you're hearing officers getting surrounded and getting in situations that are here. They're getting shot at. Officers are hurt. But at the same side, you know, we understand that's a small minority of the protesters who are kind of hijacking the message. And in that regard, it's disheartening. But the resolve of the chief of police and what he's doing to keep morale up has been good while trying to facilitate discussions with the mayor and other police chiefs around the region has been good. But I listened to President Obama today, and I got to tell you, for the first time in almost 4 years, it was nice to hear a person who's been in that position talk about listening to one another and talk about police commission.
Ooh, we're losing you there, but thank you for calling, man, and stay safe.
Yep.
It can't be easy to be a police officer this week, and I'm not trying to make excuses or say anything other than
it's complicated out there, man. I mean, there are a lot of people that are doing the right thing. The vast majority of people, 99% of the people, are doing the right thing. They're marching. They're raising their voices. They're holding their signs. They are there for peaceful protest. And then there's that radical fringe element that is there to just wreak havoc. I'm sure as a police officer, it's difficult managing those two things at the same time.
All right, 877-710-ESPN. We'll continue to take your phone calls. We're going to talk a little baseball at 4:30. Pedro Moore is going to come on. If you didn't hear, not surprisingly, the major league owners rejected the 114-game proposal today. But, Mace, one thing they said that was interesting, they said they're not going to counter it. They're not going to come up with that. So I don't know where that leaves us. We'll get into that with Pedro.
That's coming up for you, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Last hour, we dug into the NBA proposal that we think will pass the Board of Governors tomorrow.
Fingers crossed.
22-team return with 8 regular season games starting July the 31st in Orlando. Nothing final, but that's what Woj just tweeted, and that's what multiple sources have confirmed. So we assume that that's the direction it's going to go.
And right now we're talking about the Drew Brees issue today. Both Drew Brees and Vic Fangio have kind of stepped in it. They have both talked about how, in the case of Brees, and we haven't played this in a while, so Funch, let's play Drew Brees again. This was an interview Drew Brees did last night, which has caused a reaction today from people like LeBron James and even his own teammates, guys like Malcolm Jenkins, that have people very mad at Drew. Here's what he said.
Well, I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played and when I look at the flag of the United States. I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II, one in the Army and one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and to try to make our country and this world a better place. So every time I stand with my hand over my heart, looking at that flag and singing the national anthem, that's what I think about. And in many cases, it brings me to tears, thinking about all that has been sacrificed, not just those in the military, but for that matter, those throughout the civil rights movements of the 60s, and everyone and all that has been endured by so many people up until this point. And is everything right with our country right now? No, it's not. We still have a long way to go. But I think what you do by standing there and showing respect to the flag with your hand over your heart is it shows unity. It shows that we are all in this together. We can all do better. And that we are all part of the solution.
Hundreds of thousands of people in the streets in the last week, maybe in the millions. And somehow Drew Brees found a way to, instead of just standing up and speaking out for what is right, to revert to a conversation from 4 or 5 years ago with Colin Kaepernick and kneeling during the national anthem. Drew Brees has unbelievable power, and that's what he chose to talk about as opposed to what's happening right now.
And the strange thing is he ended that talking about unity, how he feels it can bring everyone together. On his own team, there is a defensive back named Malcolm Jenkins. He used to play for the Eagles. Now he plays for the Saints. Malcolm Jenkins heard what Drew Brees just said and said this in an interview today.
Our communities are under siege, and we need help. And what you're telling us is, don't ask for help that way. Ask for a different way. I can't listen to it when you ask that way. We're done asking, Drew. And people who share your sentiments, who express those, and push them throughout the world, the airways, are the problem. And it's unfortunate because I considered you a friend. I looked up to you. You're somebody who I had a great deal of respect for. But sometimes you should shut the f*** up.
So there are people not happy. And Mace, the one thing when Brees was talking about, it's a perfectly valid opinion for him to envision his grandparents and be deeply spiritual during the playing of the anthem. I think that's actually kind of cool. That's what he gets every time he's standing on the sidelines and he gets the anthem. But imagine if someone else felt that way, felt that deeply spiritual about the anthem and thought, I consider this a sacred moment. But they were so upset and so frustrated by no one solving this particular problem that they had to come up with a way to get somebody to notice. And the only way they could think of was to disrupt the anthem, which is, by the way, disruption's the part of a protest. And so that's what they decided to do. And Drew, and like Malcolm Jenkins says, Drew said, well, you can't do that. You can't ask that way. Well, look at the streets now.
Yeah.
You think people are protesting in the middle of a pandemic, by the way. Everybody's putting their own health at risk. Do you think they're doing that for fun?
Yeah, he's answering a question that isn't being asked right now. Nobody is talking about the national anthem and kneeling. We've moved past that. We now see people everywhere in the streets. Somehow to go back to that or to revisit that at this point in time, knowing what's happening in the country, just is such a huge mistake. And, you know, we use the term tone deaf. I would actually use the word wrong. It's just wrong.
Here's TC in L.A. on line two. Hey, TC, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
How you guys doing?
Good, TC.
You know, I the way my conversation started, I was going to mess with Steve about being scared of the Clippers, and then you guys went to a way serious more.
You can still mess with him, TC.
Feel free. I'm not as scared of no Clippers.
Because I think the Lakers, as a Laker fan, I'm not afraid of anybody. Bring them on.
Well, you know, Steve knows there's only one team that's really capable of knocking the Lakers out of the playoffs, and that's the Clippers. That's why he's scared of them.
No, see, I'm not scared. I just love the hilarity of the Clippers going out early in the playoffs again after all this buildup.
Okay, but I'm going to switch rules to Drew Brees for a second. My father was in the Marine Corps, and he went to Vietnam 3 times. And I feel like, and he's still here today, he'll be 83 years old.
Good for him.
This coming Monday. You know,
happy birthday.
I will let him know. But, you know, the thing is, when the Kaepernick thing went down, everybody, you know, what the military should feel disrespected about is how people tried to use them to deflect the police brutality that Colin Kaepernick was protesting about. Everybody knew that his protest had nothing to do with the military, had nothing to do with the flag. But yet, everybody tried to use the military as a deflection to hide what the police were doing. Drew Brees, I think, did the same thing with his comments. Vic Fangio, he could have saved that apology. The yes. only reason he apologized was to cover his behind. Because anybody looking around the NFL, when you guys bring up the numbers about the black head coaches in the NFL and how they don't get another job, or most of them don't get another job after they got fired and stuff. I mean, Fangio's ignoring that. And so, to me, he could have saved that apology. But, you know, I want to commend you guys for talking about these issues and not being in denial about what's going on, because it really made me feel good to see all these different races come together and protest. You know, I've never seen that before until this one.
Yeah, me either. Me yep. either, TC. You know. I think that's why we got a chance here. We got a chance to change the country. And
exactly.
And part of that is calling out this systemic racism when we see it. It didn't always happen before, but I think it's happening now. And and because of that, maybe we got a shot. Hey, TC, tell your dad happy birthday and thank you for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, TC. Hey, let me bounce something off you, John. This is actually Vic Fangio's statement, and I want to tell you, I want you to ask me if this is, if he does enough.
Okay.
He says, after reflecting on my comments yesterday and listening to players this morning, I realized what I said regarding racism and discrimination in the NFL was wrong. While I have never personally experienced those terrible things firsthand during my 33 years in the NFL, I understand that many players, coaches, and staff have a different perspective. I should have been more clear, and I am sorry. I wanted to make the point yesterday that there is no color within the locker rooms I have been in or on the playing field I have coached on. As the head coach, I look forward to listening to the players both individually and collectively to support them and work hand in hand to create meaningful change.
Well, it's a good apology, and you have to let people apologize. But if I'm being dead honest with you, I don't think he wrote it. I think he got the team or some crisis PR firm to write it. And I think it was his only move. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a well-written statement. I do not believe that the guy who made those comments yesterday is the same one who wrote this statement today.
And not only that, by the nature of how it was executed, he did it on a Zoom call yesterday, but when it came time to apologize, he did it in a statement.
Yep.
Where no one could question him or ask him about it. So that says... that says something right there. Let's go to line four, Kelvin from Bloomington. Hey, Kelvin, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Hey, Kelvin. What's up, man?
Hey, Steve, I just want to say, Steve, I go way back with you. I remember your first day on air in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And I remember you tried to do something called burn somebody's buns.
Yes, I did. I did. I did. I used to do a bit where I'd call and goof on somebody on the phone, and we called that masonizing. It was a lot like what Rick Dees used to do, and some of the morning FM guys still do. I remember it well, man. I remember it well.
And they told you not to do it, so you didn't do it.
They told me they wouldn't let me do it anymore. Exactly.
Right, but I remember that. And anyway, what I wanted to say was this. What Drew Brees had said. Drew Brees is saying America from his perspective. Now, we African-American people have had family members who also fought in those wars. And when they came home, they were hung in their uniforms. So when he thinks of that, what do you think we're thinking about? And the other thing about Colin Kaepernick, he wasn't even trying to protest. He was just sitting down. during the anthem, and I saw a cameraman who was not standing at attention.
Yep.
Went and took his picture. Then they started asking him questions. It wasn't even a protest. He just didn't want to stand. And what I can't get over is this. When you're at home and the national anthem is playing, who's standing up? When the national
we could take it a step further than that. They don't put it on TV. They go to a commercial. So we don't even see it at home. So, I mean, right, that's how important that the TV networks think it is.
Correct. Or do they stop selling tickets when the national anthem is playing? Do the people stop selling candy? I don't know. But
do people stop walking to their seats? Yeah, I mean, do people take their hats off? Do people take the earbuds out of their ears? I mean, it's all. How many people try to videotape the national anthem? They've got their phone out. How disrespectful is that? I mean, all this stuff is going on. And the fact that you would physically take a knee as a means to protest, to me, seems completely reasonable and, in retrospect, really, really smart because it started this conversation.
Yeah, Kelvin, those are really good points, and we thank you for calling in and making them, and stay safe. But that's true. Oh. I mean, the national anthem, for people are conflating that disrespecting the anthem with a protest about police brutality and racial injustice. They're two completely different conversations.
Yeah.
Okay, coming up, we'll get back into sports. Baseball seems to be at a little bit of an impasse. We all think it's coming back.
Yep. Better be coming back.
But the owners did something today that I don't know, seemed unnecessarily dramatic. We'll get into it with Pedro Mora next.
Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. So we got a pretty good feeling now about how the NBA is coming back. We think, at least according to multiple sources, that July the 31st, we are going to see a return of the NBA for 8 regular season games and then a playoff system with probably a play-in. What we don't know is how, and boy, I hate to say this, but if baseball is going to come back this summer. And joining us right now is Pedro Mora from The Athletic. Pedro, thanks for coming on. How are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Appreciate it, Pedro. And so what did it mean today when they said the owners have rejected the players' latest proposal? That was kind of expected, the 114-game proposed season. But what caught me, Pedro, was, and they won't make another offer. What does that mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. They caught me, you know, the same thing caught me, and you're referring to my colleagues reported Kevin Rosenthal and Evan Drellick at The Athletic, and yeah, it's like, what kind of good faith negotiation effort is that, right? That sentence kind of lays it all out there. These two sides are in a really acrimonious position right now. It's so much different from the NBA, like you guys pointed out. The distinction could not be larger at this point between the two sides and how they're working together. It's a truly remarkable thing. You wonder, okay, what's the next step here? If there's no, you know, one side's offer was rejected, the other side does not plan to make another offer, what happens next? There's days here of uncertainty coming.
Yeah, I mean, all along we've thought there seems to be the outline for at least some kind of compromise, whether it be 50 games, 126 games, prorated salary, deferred salary, which I thought was a big key in the baseball players, the MLBPA offer was deferral of some portion of the salary for this year. Do you still have a sense that we're moving in the right direction, or is this a serious roadblock today?
I think it's definitely a serious roadblock. I don't think it's fair to say that they're moving in the right direction, right? When there's no plan for another offer. You know, that said, I still think there's at least a 50% chance or so that there will be games played this season in baseball. You know, I think the two sides still stand to lose a lot if there is no season. You know, I mean, a lot of fans will lose interest in the sport in the long term if there is no season. And so I think both sides still have, you know, if not the financial motivation that the owners claim, both sides still have long-term motivation to keep themselves viable in the entertainment landscape by putting together some sort of baseball season.
We're talking to Pedro Mora from The Athletic. Pedro, if it doesn't happen, if somehow this doesn't happen, what would it strictly be financial that these two sides are, or is there, you mentioned earlier, the NBA seems to be a legitimate partnership where they like each other. Based on what you know, do these sides, we know they don't trust each other. Are they making a deal in spite of that?
a great question. I think that there's a lot of animosity on the player's side still stemming from the last collective bargaining agreement. There's a, you know, it's one of the most common things you hear in spring training, especially when players are looser, when they're not as focused on the day-to-day game, that they're still upset about what happened the last time. And, you know, there's a coming CBA negotiation, even if this thing is sorted out this year, that, you know, next winter in the, come December 2021, the two sides will have to agree on something again. There's still, it's like any sort of agreement where one side feels like they compromised much more than the other. And that's where the players stand from the last CBA. And so I think that there are a lot of players, hundreds of them, who feel like the league is trying to take advantage of them, you know? And so it's just not a good, I think it's fair to say that from a lot of people's perspective, there's not a good faith negotiation approach.
So I'm a huge baseball fan, Pedro. It is my favorite sport. And for me, we've been in this pandemic, so we've had no sports at all to speak of. We had a Michael Jordan documentary, which turned into a phenomenon because people were so hungry. Baseball is missing a tremendous opportunity here. The idea that they could be the first team sport, professional team sport in the U.S. to come back would be an unbelievable opportunity, a marketing opportunity, an opportunity to establish themselves for a few weeks before the NBA starts. Is there nobody on either side that sees that as an opportunity?
I think you're clearly right. There's no arguing against what you just said. I mean, it's the Jordan doc is a great example. I mean, I would have never watched that, and I ended up watching every episode and being enthralled. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of other people in the same boat. I think you're totally right. That said, you know, money's money into these sides, and there's also the matter of the setting up the long term precedent for what happens when the next CBA agreement is due for discussion. I don't know. I think these two sides, I think it's probably fair to say that nobody really knows what happens next year. That it's sort of embarrassing that, you know, it's June 3rd. They need to decide pretty soon. They've said that they want to play at least 82 games. That looks increasingly unlikely. There's sort of that, like, an amazing impasse considering the circumstances that, you know, if it ends up being money that undoes this thing in amidst all of what has happened in 2020, that if the two sides cannot agree to play a baseball season because of money, that'll be embarrassing.
Pedro Mora joining us. Pedro is a senior writer for The Athletic. He covers baseball for the site. Pedro, you cover the Dodgers. The Dodgers are loaded. Is it as simple as saying, the fewer games, the bigger chance there is to mess that up because it's a smaller sample size? Or do you think the Dodgers are so loaded that it doesn't matter if they play 50, 80, or 114, they're going to win it anyway?
It's a great way of framing it. I think to a certain extent, yes. It is that they will suffer more than most teams in a shortened season because there will be more chances for the other lesser teams to unseat them. You know, it's the 80 game. You know, it's a lot easier to imagine the Arizona Diamondbacks stringing together 80 good games and 162 good games. That said, I would still favor the Dodgers in any length of time this season. You know, if they played 13 games in 2020, I would still think they would win the division, right? And there are also going to be some other advantages that they can seize on if there is a 2020 season. The rosters would be larger. And their depth would be another advantage in that situation. They have the best 26 through 40th men among any team in baseball. And so if you're allowing 30-plus players on a given day to be activated, that would also be in the Dodgers' advantage. So I don't think they're not going to be at a significant disadvantage, all told.
You know, here's what I think. Smaller the sample size, the greater the randomness that can take place. All of a sudden you lose 8 out of 10 and it's like, holy, what are we doing? We're drifting out of this thing. It's like the fewer the games, it's bad for the Dodgers to have fewer games, in my opinion, Pedro.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. That's not wrong. That is correct. Right. But, it's also bad for the Dodgers to not play a season at all this year, right?
Sure.
And lose Mookie Betts' services, right? It's the teams that were shaping up to be the best this year are the teams that would suffer most. The teams that were shaping up to be the worst this year will benefit the most. So, like the Giants, for example, this would be, you know, it's not ideal for them, but they wouldn't mind that much, you know, a rebuild season, right? They get a year closer to being out from under the the big contract that they have. So it's an interesting thing to monitor in the years to come, is what happens if there is no 2020 season, and who, you know, who benefits most in the long term.
Pedro, by the way, you used to cover the Angels. I would imagine the opposite is true for them, right? A shorter season, the better. Maybe Ohtani gets hot. Pujols doesn't have to play as many games. Trout's always going to be Trout. Shorter season probably helps the Angels.
Yes, especially in that division against the Astros, if it is a normal AL West. But yes, you would think so. I think, you know, to boil it down to overly simplistic numbers, the better you are, the worse a short season is.
Right, right. All right, so what's your best guess as to when this gets resolved and when we might see actual baseball games?
Let's call it, I still think if I had to bet on it, I would say yes, there will be. And I would say maybe another 10 days of negotiation and then setting up for a mid-July season start at like 60 to 70 games, something along those lines. Not that many.
Is there a drop-dead date? Like, if they don't have this worked out by the middle of July, is that it?
You would think so. I haven't heard, you know, I haven't seen reported, nor have I heard an absolute drop-dead date like I think the NBA had put out there earlier this spring. But no, you would think that would have to be sometime in July. They're not going to start the baseball season around August 15th. It's just too late. The weather gets too problematic.
Last thing for you. Wouldn't baseball be smart to hold these negotiations privately instead of publicly?
You would think so, Mace, wouldn't you? You would. I'm continually surprised by that. I guess it speaks to the fact that the people covering this industry are good at their jobs and are getting that information out there. Maybe it's not all intentionally on the league's perspective, but yeah, I am surprised by that. That's not how I would operate.
It seems like pandemic, civil unrest, arguing over a few bucks is really a terrible, terrible look.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. And by the way, Ken Kendrick, the guy who runs the Diamondbacks, said today, Pedro, that they don't want to play past October because, you know, there's a lot of doctors predicting the pandemic could come back in November. Do you buy that they're locked into not going past the traditional World Series time?
I don't. I think that the second wave stuff is overblown, not in the sense that there isn't a possibility that there could be a second wave of the coronavirus pandemic. Absolutely, that seems to be the case based from what epidemiologists and public health experts have to say. But the idea that it's the second wave is going to happen like on November 10th instead
right.
of October 15th.
That they would know the exact date of it. Yeah, that's a good point.
You can't predict that. Like, it's just, that's ridiculous.
Pedro, thank you for doing this.
Thanks,
man.
Thanks, Pedro.
Stay safe.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
All right, appreciate it, man.
They can't. This is happening, right?
I'll tell you what. I mean, as a baseball will never recover from this. Will never recover from this
if it doesn't happen.
Arguing over money during this point in American history.
I've never considered that there was a possibility Mookie Betts would never play for the Dodgers.
No.
If they don't play, doesn't that possibility become a reality?
Well, isn't it weird that originally it started with Bob Nightingale at 95%, then it went to Bob Nightingale at 60%, then it went to Pedro Mora at 50%? The odds are going down that baseball's coming
still
back.
Still think it's happening.
I pray it's happening. All right, more Mason and Ireland next. 5 o'clock Fast Track is coming up to Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. As protests continue across Los Angeles, a huge protest in downtown L.A., protesters in Sherman Oaks, in Hancock Park, and, of course, across the nation. We know that Derek Chauvin, the police officer who knelt on George Floyd's neck, killing him last Monday, has been arrested on third-degree murder today. The other three officers that were involved in that incident, who were at the very least complicit in it, have been arrested. I don't know what their charges were, but they have been charged in Minneapolis. So finally, there's an answer to whether or not they would be charged. By the way, Sean McVay was asked today if he'd be supportive of players who decide to kneel during the national anthem or show other displays of protest when the season begins. There's a shift in his previous stance on the matter. He says, absolutely, I think it would be extremely silly of me if I'm sitting here saying I'm going to listen to, learn, and try to have empathy and understanding to not allow guys the platform if they feel like it. It's the right way to represent the healing and some of those solutions that we're looking to. I absolutely would be open and wanting to listen, and yes, be open to that.
You know what's interesting about that, that you bring up McVay? Every team, Mace, almost every league and every team sent out a statement, okay? Yep. And you and I were talking the other day about the importance of statements, of reading the room and sending out statements.
Yes.
But it depends what you do after that.
Sure.
Funch, I'm going to cue up Jim Trotter here. Jim Trotter is a guy we know well. He's worked at ESPN. When Mason and I first met Jim, he was at the San Diego Union-Tribune. He's an African-American NFL writer who's really good and really smart.
Yep.
He was asked today, I believe it was on the NFL Network, about the NFL's statement on George Floyd. And I thought what he said was very candid. Here's Jim Trotter.
There are three elements here in that statement for me. Number one, it was late, coming days after the killing. Number two, it was insufficient. It never mentioned police once in there. It never mentioned racism once in there. And number three, the words rang hollow for just what you said. Number one, how can you say you're about racial equality when there are only four head coaches of color among 32 head coaches? How can you say you're about racial equality when there are only two black general managers among the 32 general managers? How can you say you're about racial equality when there has never been a black club president in league history and never been a majority black owner? How can you say you are about racial equality when you look at the league office and, as I counted, among the 12 executive vice presidents, there are only two people of color? Hmm. How can you say you're about racial diversity when you look in the newsroom, which covers a league that's 70% black, and there isn't one person of color among the managers in that newsroom? And lastly, how can you say you're about racial diversity when Colin Kaepernick peacefully demonstrates to fight against police brutality against people of color, and you have owners who will not sign him to their team because he made that? Now, you can say you're about racial diversity, but you have a credibility problem when all of those facts line up against you.
So, Sean, wow. By the way, I thought Trotter was great. Yep. Sean McVay, for him to say, and he came out yesterday, was very eloquent and said, yeah, I'm going to do a better job of listening, blah, blah, blah. It's what you do. So I hope if one of the Rams does decide to exercise his right to protest, that Sean won't bench him or condemn him, that he absolutely follows up. And it sounds like he will. But I thought what Jim Trotter said was really enlightening.
Wow. Only two executive vice presidents in the NFL offices, people of color.
Right. And it's a league that's 70% black. You know, that's what people are trying to point out, and it's what you do after the statement. Anybody can issue a statement. What are you doing after that?
Yeah.
And I think Jim Trotter held them accountable there, and I hope he continues to stay on it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to believe that these protests, and they're just enormous and everywhere right now, that these protests will spill over into what we see as the continuation of the NBA season coming up late July, early August. I have to believe it spills over to whatever we see of an NFL season. I mean, I have to believe there are going to be many more athletes who are willing to take a knee or will choose to take a knee during the national anthem after the George Floyd incident than there were last year and the year before that. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah. And let again, I feel a change here. I feel, looking at the complexion of the protesters, looking at the way this has gone on after two or three days and nobody's letting it go, the way white people, particularly older white people, are being held accountable when they show they don't understand or don't get systemic racism, all that's different. All that's new. And hopefully it lasts. Hopefully we won't be having this conversation again in 6 months.
All right. Coming up next for you is 5 o'clock Fast Track. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.